Going to take you on a tour of the natural and cultural landscapes of the Lake Superior region now with my guest. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. My guest is Margaret Bogue, is the Professor Emerita of History and Liberal Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And she is the author of Around the Shores of Lake Superior. It's now in its second edition, just recently released. She also wrote the award-winning Fishing the Great Lakes and Environmental History, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. And I believe the second edition of her book is also published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Always fun to have Margaret come by, and it's particularly nice to have her talk for the first time with us about this second edition of her book. We'd certainly welcome any questions or comments you may have about Lake Superior or the region itself. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Or maybe you've got your own experience or place that along Lake Superior that you'd like to talk about and find out maybe whether or not Margaret's got it in her book. At any rate, give us a call for that as well. We'd love to hear from you. And Margaret, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Well, thank you so much. It's just wonderful to be here again.
Let's go back to the beginning. Why did you write this book in the first place?
Well, you know, every year in the summer months, particularly beginning notably in July and August, and then on into the fall, September, October, there are thousands of people who drive around the shores of Lake Superior in order to see the magnificent natural sights. It is truly a great national, international treasure that we have in terms of beauty. Mm-hmm. And the aesthetics you can't measure, but they are very real, as those who will testify to that who've been there. Mm. And they drive around, and maybe they're just enjoying the landscape. Well, that's fine. But I felt, as a historian, that it was a nice opportunity to introduce them to some of the natural and cultural history of particularly Lake Superior. And that's one reason that I did it. Another reason that I did it is we're very concerned now about the Great Lakes. They are such a vital water resource for the two nations and such an important place to live for millions of people. This concern is one that I think needs to have a little bit of documentation to go along with it, and you can pick that up out of the text of the book as you drive around the lake and enjoy all of the wonderful scenery.
Well, that's one of the things I really like about the book, because you've got some nice history along with the places that you talk about around Lake Superior.
Yes, it's a natural. There are some main themes in the history of Lake Superior, and what I did was to introduce the book with a series of, I believe, 12 or so essays in which I talk about those main themes, picking them up like, the fur trade, the great copper development in the mm-hmm. Keweenaw, the iron mining, the fishing, the transportation, the efforts to save Lake Superior, which date way back, if you really want to think about it, you can date them back into the 1870s in one way. And so I did introduce the themes, and then the 159 individual entries about locations around the lake each have a little essay, and those locations tie in with the main theme. So you can get the big picture, and then you can get the specific picture.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the nice part about it. Now, already we have callers online to visit with you. And maybe we should we take caller two?
Sure.
Let's do that. Casey in Green Bay, we'll go to you first. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. How are you today?
Great, thanks.
I'm from a small town in Bayfield County called Port Wing.
Yes.
You know where Port Wing is?
Oh, yes. Port Wing very much. And I think everybody is aware of Port Wing now with your wonderful woman basketball player.
I was just going to tell you, you better go talk to Jolene. She can give you some information, Jolene Angers. But the reason I'm calling is that Port Wing is very noticeably low-level Lake Superior water level. It's extremely low this year. It must have dropped 2 feet.
Uh-huh.
And we're very concerned about that up there. Yeah. And I'd like to know if you have what your info would be on something, why that is happening besides global warming. It's got to be some other reason.
Oh, okay. Indeed, Lake Superior this year is at the lowest point it's been since 1926. And this is a condition that is common to all of the Great Lakes, low water levels right now. And it's a combination of extreme drought conditions for the watershed that feeds Lake Superior, because the lake depends on rivers. There are more than 200 rivers that feed into Lake Superior. If you get drought conditions, obviously you've got less runoff into the lake. And what is more than the drought conditions, the lack of rain, there also has been, in all the Great Lakes, Superior included, increased use of the waters of the lakes and increasing destruction of those features of the landscape that protect the water supply. Your aquifers are down, and you have loss, certainly, of moisture and retention of moisture from use of forest lands. There's a loss of moisture in the generation of electric power to a certain degree. And indeed, every time something goes away and doesn't come back to the lakes, you're decreasing their water supply. You add that plus the drought conditions, and this is what produces this particular situation, which is very alarming.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Casey. Nick, and your turn now. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I'm glad that you're on the show. I just moved back from a little town in the UP called Gwynn, and I lived about 30 miles from Lake Superior, and I miss it so much, but I just couldn't afford to stay living up there because the economy's so bad. And the one question I have is, we had a dam break up there. I don't know if you remember that, like, about...
I really don't know.
Oh, okay. We had a dam break down there, and it took out, like, bridges and stuff, and I mean, it just destroyed the landscape, and I just was wondering if you knew about it and if, how much of an effect it had on Lake Superior, because it was, people were actually trapped on an island for about a week while they tried to get them across the river. It took out a camping ground and everything. I mean, it was amazing the devastation that did. It changed the landscape so much I don't even recognize it anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible when those kinds of things happen. And, of course, one way to look at it is when a dam breaks, a dam that has been holding back water from going into the lake, one may say that it, in one sense, is beneficial for the water. But if, on the other hand, you're destroying whole landscape areas that are a complex of retaining water and gradually feeding it into the lake, that's very, very serious indeed. And the two would have to be balanced off against each other in order to come out with a perfect answer, and I can't do that.
Thanks very much for calling. In your book, you talk about, you describe a little bit about what you have in your book in terms of copy. But you also have a lot of wonderful photographs of the lake shore.
Yes, there are about 240 photographs in the book. They're a combination of photographs that come from archival sources, like the University of Minnesota, the University of Wisconsin, or I should say the Wisconsin Historical Society, the Minnesota Historical Society, that's more proper. And then also Michigan has contributed to the photos that are in there, particularly with respect to the Iron Ranges in Michigan. And in addition to that, we have these maps that were done by the UW Cartography Laboratory that show a great great detail how specific places are linked to the lake, the alterations that have been made in the landscape to help link them to the lake. And then there are all these personal photographs that various people have done. I did a bunch of them. My spouse, Alan Bogue, did some, and even a daughter, Ellie Bogue, has contributed a great blue heron in flight looking for breakfast. And then we have individual photographs done by just outstanding photographers.
Yeah, some beautiful photography in the book, no doubt about it. Gary in Washburn, we'll go to you now. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Larry. Good to talk with you and Margaret. Hello, Margaret. I'm a a former student of Betty Myers, your neighbor on Blue Lake.
Absolutely, yes.
I think I probably have met you a time or two at Betty's years past.
I think you're probably right.
Anyhow, I work on the research vessel Kaiyai on Lake Superior.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see the lake from a little different view from the water. Mm-hmm. I circumnavigate it at least once every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you covered some of the islands like the Slates and Michipicoten, Caribou.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Some of the real remote spots.
Yes, they are definitely there. I tried, and in every case where it's been made into one of these marvelous island areas, has been made into either a provincial or a state natural preserve area, or into a national or state or provincial park. Then it's there. And I deliberately tried to get all of the wonderful natural locations that I could.
Well, we frequently anchor in places and take our rigid hull inflatable boat ashore, mm-hmm. places like Cascade Falls,
mm-hmm.
and the islands. I have photographs going back since I've been in this job since 91.
Oh, boy.
All around the entire lake, and I shoot every time I go, and I've gone digital recently, so sometime we'll have to talk.
Wonderful.
I'll have to call Betty and see when she's going to be about.
Gary, thank
That's
you.
That's great.
Yep.
Appreciate the call very much. You can join in, too, as we talk the natural and cultural landscape of the Lake Superior region with Margaret Bogue, who is the author of Around the Shores of Lake Superior, now in its second edition. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about Lake Superior today with Margaret Bogue, author of Around the Shores of Lake Superior. Again, join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Jack in Eagle River, you are next. Hi, Jack.
Good morning.
Morning.
We were just up at the Copper Harbor area, and we stayed at the Keweenaw Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And while we visited there, we went over to Fort Wilkins.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I thought, ho-hum, you know, it'll just be a cannon with a plaque or something. Turns out to be a lot more than that, and it was really intriguing to see the life of a soldier in the mid-19th century, you know, on a post that was supposed to keep the miners and the Indians at bay. And I thought maybe you might add something about Fort Wilkins.
Yeah.
Well, Fort Wilkins was a very, very interesting development. As you're noting, it came to be with the first really metal rush. You know, we talk about gold rushes, mm-hmm. into California and so on. Well, this copper rush was the first rush into a mining area in the history of this country. And that happened in the 40s. It was at its height between about 43 and 46. And
1843?
Yeah, 1843 and 1846. I live in the 19th century, Larry. That's why I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. But anyway, people came in, they were just half crazed, thinking that they were going to find a great big solid chunk of copper, similar to the Ontonagon Boulder that had been discovered and kept getting reported in the news. And that would be, you know, pure copper. It wouldn't be anything that you'd have to go through an elaborate smelting process or refining process to get to the metal. And they, all kinds of people, they were legislators, there were people who were lawyers, there were people who were just everyday, ordinary persons. They flocked in and started staking out claims, and so it became very important for the federal government to set up a land office and establish a claim system. And at the same time, they were so rowdy and unruly that it seemed that order had to be maintained. Now, the question, some said, you've got to protect us from the Ojibwe Indians. Well,
Probably the other way around.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was about the other way around. But at any rate, for a time, and it was, you know, a brief time, really, by the end of the Civil War, Fort Wilkins was no longer a military post because there wasn't any point to it anymore. And so it remained for a number of years, being treated by the locals as a place to go for picnics and that sort of thing. And then when ultimately it was ceded to the state of Michigan, it was developed as a historic site, and a lot of the original buildings remained intact. Others have been replicated, and I do think that the people there at Fort Wilkins do a magnificent job of showing people around and explaining things to them, how it worked and why it worked, and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate the call very much. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Your original book was published 1979.
Yes.
By C. Grant at UW-Madison. That's 28 years ago. How different is your second edition from what you found back then?
It's very different because between the time that was published and the present, a tremendous amount of research has been done of all kinds into the natural elements of Lake Superior and into the history of Lake Superior. And certainly, what I've tried to do is to incorporate in this new edition the results of this kind of research. And I think it helps us very greatly to understand the development, say, of the iron mines that surround Lake Superior, certainly the copper mines, certainly the lumbering that took place that was so important there, the transportation history, the construction of all manner of craft, lighthouse construction, life-saving station construction, the establishment of parks of national, provincial, and state nature. All of these things have transpired, and a great deal has been done also in terms of archaeological work. For instance, the underwater archaeology has been just tremendous in going down and looking at old shipwrecks in an effort to find out how these craft were built, how they were propelled, and especially rich in that respect is the area of the Apostle Islands and also Isle Royale. There are just tremendous a number of shipwrecks. And the coast, the Minnesota coast of Lake Superior is another graveyard, as is an area that extends from about Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, on west for about 100 miles or so as far as the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. All kinds of shipwrecks in there. And some of these have been established as underwater preserves where regulated kinds of diving can be done. But the effort is to try hard to keep this from those who just go in and want to get stuff and pull it out and take souvenirs and that sort of thing. They're trying to preserve those as archaeological sites. And then on land, you know, a lot of archaeology that tells us more and more about the native people.
What's maybe a couple of questions, one relating to your last comment about native people, but also about the ships, the shipwrecks. Mm-hmm. Are there places where sort of maybe the average person could actually see a shipwreck or with a fairly minimal effort be able to observe?
That's definitely true. If you get up in the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore area, there are charter boats that will take people out, and very skillful and very, very well-trained captains of these boats that can take person's two locations. Some of them are glass-bottomed, and they can even see some of the shipwrecks from that. If you're on land and you want to see evidence of shipwrecks, you see those in various places, but of course there isn't much to look at.
Right.
It's pretty well deteriorated. There is a Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum that is at Whitefish Point. The Whitefish Point Lighthouse area has a shipwreck museum that is a very wonderful place to stop and, you know, really get some idea about the nature of shipwrecks on Lake Superior and elsewhere.
Do you have some favorite spots of your own that you like to visit more than others?
Yes, and the one that just pops into mind is one that's over on the east shore of Lake Superior, and it's in Lake Superior Provincial Park at Agawa Canyon. There are these marvelous pictographs on one of the cliff walls right down at the edge of the lake that record the history of the movement of a group of warriors from what we would call the Porcupine Mountains Natural Preserve, that's not quite right, Park of Michigan, which is one of Michigan's greatest state parks. There on the Carp River, allegedly, this group of warriors took off and went across the lake. And the purpose exactly of why they did, we don't know. But on the walls of the canyon, Agawa Canyon, there is depicted the craft that they used, the number of warriors that were there, the various animal spirits that helped them in the process of making the voyage. And it's very hard to get to. You park and you go down and you're allegedly on a trail. But this thing is full of boulders. You find you're using both hands and both feet in order to make your way down to the water's edge. And all along the way, the province of Ontario has posted signs. This is a very dangerous place to go, and if you fall in, we can't help you. So that would scare off the temp. But people, literally by the hundreds, go there and walk down and go through all of this. And I mean from little kids about 4 or 5 years old through people who are way up in their 70s and into their 80s will make this trek in order to see those. That's one of my favorites.
We had a caller online from the Dakotas who was visiting wants to visit Isle Royal,
mm-hmm.
and wondered what you could tell us about Isle Royal.
Well, Isle Royal is an extraordinarily interesting place to visit. There you find everything from evidence of the prehistoric mining of copper by native people through the fishing history, the history of later copper mining and refining that was very important in the late 19th century. You find wonderful evidence of the beauty, extreme beauty of Isle Royal. A lot of people go saying, well, we're going to go over there because we want to see the moose. We're interested in moose. Well, there's a lot of trouble between the wolf moose population, which is a kind of balancing act in nature that keeps one from overrunning and taking over the island. Right now, unfortunately, both the moose and the wolves are in decline. And that is something that the biologists are deeply concerned about. But various sorts of diseases got into the wolf population. And at the same time, a lot of the moose are suffering from problems of that sort.
Oh.
Yeah, infestation. So it's on a decline, and I don't think one should go expecting you're really going to see a moose. You might if you're lucky, but lighthouses, yes, and evidences of shipwrecks, yes, and just enormous natural beauty is there.
Steve in Danbury, your turn now. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Larry and Margaret. Sounds like a great book. I look forward to reading it.
Oh, thank you.
When you were talking about Lake Superior Provincial Park, that certainly is one of my very favorite places on the lake, and not far from the pictographs that you were describing as Old Woman Bay, which is one of those truly jaw-dropping places when you first walk down. And you're surrounded by the cliffs there and standing on the sand beach and looking up at the visage. It's just like almost no other place on earth.
It is extraordinarily beautiful. I agree with you. And another one that I recommend there in the park, which I'm sure you are well versed in visiting, is Catherine Cove. And that one has a beauty all of its own. And incidentally, the cover on the book was one that was made near Catherine Cove in the late afternoon by a very, very wonderful,
beautiful
professional. It's just a beautiful picture by a professional
photographer. I look forward to seeing it. We just enjoy sitting on the beach there at Agawa Bay and picking through all the rocks and looking out at the water. It's just an incredible spot.
Yes, and it has such an interesting effect on a person. You kind of get everything in perspective.
I think that's really true. Well, thanks for reissuing it, and I look forward to reading it.
Well, thank you for your comments.
Thanks very much for calling. You know, as I heard a couple of names there and connected with a lake and the cove, Catherine Cove, for example, one wonders sometimes how these places get their names.
Yes, one certainly does, and sometimes it's very hard to figure that out. For instance, Laughing Whitefish Point. Now, that is Laughing Whitefish. I can't imagine that any whitefish in Lake Superior in recent years could be laughing. Maybe they were laughing in ancient times, but it's generally assumed in that particular case that it was the shape of the projection of land from the water that perhaps caused that name to be given to it. Catherine, I can't tell you who Catherine was for Catherine Cove, but all of those things are pretty well explained. When you're at a location, that kind of thing is pretty well explained in some very fine descriptive material that's been developed either by the national governments or certainly the provincial or state. Lots of fine signage.
Norbert in Middleton, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Your program has brought back some wonderful recollections.
Oh, thank you.
Up until 4 years ago, we had spent something like 18 seasons of sailing on Lake Superior. And I would like to reiterate that the way to see the lake is from a boat.
Uh-huh.
Your point of view is from the land, I presume. And we are limited, of course, with a little 30-foot sailboat to within about a half mile of the shore. But one place comes particularly to mind, and that is Otter Head. That's an island off of the east shore and along that park range.
Mm-hmm.
There are some wonderful lighthouse keepers, Elwin and Joy Richardson, who actually made the steps leading up to the lighthouse just a trip of beauty that they had planted and just made it a wonderful experience. And subsequently, the assistant lighthouse keepers, the Guanaus, were equally hospitable. There had been a fishery there at one time, and unfortunately, circumstances changed, so it could no longer continue. We have other recollection, of course, of Isle Royale, and we are particularly indebted to Ron and Bonnie, who wrote The Superior Way, which gave good descriptions of how to enter and to navigate some of those areas. And, of course, we depended heavily on the Great Lakes Cruising Club. But between all those wonderful recollections, why we're just continuing to listen and wondering if you'll get around to talking about the Pukasawa pits, which are geological formations, which we have tried to find more about, but have not succeeded.
I am very interested in the Pocosol pits also, but I have not found that the various archaeologists, anthropologists who've worked on that have figured out the exact purpose for them.
Explain that for us.
These are found along the lakeshore in... I'm trying to think of the great big national park that is up to the north of
Provincial National Park?
No, it's not. It's national. It's a national Canadian National Park. And that particular huge park has Pocosol pits all along the lakeshore. And it's recognized that these pits have a very, very special meaning and significance for the Ojibwe people. And everyone is cautioned to stay away from them and not fool around with the rocks or change them in any way whatsoever. But as far as I know, nobody so far has been able to explain.
Can you describe what they are for us?
Well, they're exactly that. They're pits with rocks on all sides in along the lakeshore. And they are something that has simply, given the archaeologists, anthropologists a very hard time trying to understand them. And so it is that we were a bit in the dark. It's Pocosol National Park of Canada is the name of the place where most of those are located. I believe there are some in the Ontario Provincial Lake Superior Park also.
We were paid the ultimate compliment when the assistant lightkeeper's wife took us into her confidence and showed us one or two of the pits.
Yeah, do tell us. This would be great.
Well, this was on Otterhead. She didn't exactly swear us to secrecy, but she wanted to know, who we were and what we were up to.
Exactly. We have to protect those.
Took us into her confidence. And we went up from the lightkeeper's cottage or house. That was at the harbor level. That was the assistant lightkeeper. The main light, of course, was way up high. These people took us, less than a half-mile hike into the island. And if you didn't know where they were, why, you'd have to spend, a season exploring the island, I suppose, to find them. And there were other formations that we were allowed to be privy to. And we just have not heard anything of the geological history or... research in that direction, although one of our friends here at the university mounted an expedition to carry on some measurements at Otterhead at a different location.
Oh, that's a wonderful contribution. I'm just glad to hear that you got to actually examine.
How deep are these pits? Are they very deep? Or are they?
Well, I would say, Ruth is on the phone. What do you say about...
Not quite 8 feet, but a person could hide in them if he wanted.
Okay, so...
One theory, which really doesn't hold out because of their location, was that hunters used them to hide from caribou or whatever.
Oh, uh-huh.
To hunt them.
That's interesting.
But the other thing is that they have a religious significance.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and certainly the Ojibwe want them left alone, and everyone should honor that.
Thank you both very much for talking with us today. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate your comments. One of my listeners, Brian, as a matter of fact, has asked a question more than once, and I'll try and paraphrase it here. Why do we pay so much attention to the Great Lakes and not to the greater rivers, such as the Mississippi? He says, after all, the Great Lakes are merely a reservoir, whereas the Mississippi and the other great rivers are great rivers. And what's your take on that?
Well, I think we need to pay a lot of attention to the Great Lakes, because if you look at the Great Lakes as a whole, they contain 18% of all the fresh surface water in the world, and Lake Superior contains 10% of all of the fresh surface water in the world. And as we know, we're beginning to make very serious inroads into good, pure drinking water. We're messing up rivers. We're messing up lakes. And I think that the Great Lakes, being so significant in the total world picture, as well as very significant for both the Canadians and the Americans, thousands of them live, hundreds of thousands live around the lakes and depend on the lakes for all kinds of water uses. I think it's extremely important for us to not just say, oh, well, this is a reservoir. It's a life-giving reservoir that allows cities to operate, industries to operate, allows for pleasure as well, and something that we need to treasure, and we don't need to have this diverted into the Southwest to, you know, make lawns grow in Vegas or something like that, where they weren't supposed to in the first place. And certainly not shipping it off to Japan. There was some such proposal recently, bottled Lake Superior water and ship it out of the country. Nonsense.
Well, I tell you what, and you know, if you think about just the, we're talking mostly about Lake Superior today, but there are 10,000 miles of shoreline. Jim Packard was telling me that 10,000 miles, that's the combined coasts greater than the, or equal to the combined coasts of both the Atlantic and our Pacific shoreline.
Yes, and just if we were on to numbers, could I just interject one that I think is kind of interesting? And that is, you go around the shores of Lake Superior, and that shoreline measures 2,726 miles, and it holds 2,900 cubic miles of water.
It's a lot of water. And it's a lot of book, too, that you've got here, Margaret. Thank you so much for being with us today to talk about your book. Appreciate
it. It's been my pleasure.
Margaret Bogue, our guest today, author of Around the Shores of Lake Superior, A Guide to Historic Sites. Wonderful book. And it's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Easy to get. You can get it from the press or just go to your local bookstore. And they're going to, if they don't have it, they'll be able to order one in pretty short order. I'm pretty sure of that. Thanks again, Margaret. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to take a look at airfares coming up next year with Rick Seney of Dallas, who is CEO of FareCompare.com. That coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.